Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
Well, the question isn't how am I. The question is how are you?
I'm good.
You look a little pained.
Well, no, you know
there.
What? We talk about this being an aging show, right?
Yes.
So I guess I've gotten old enough finally to basically have my wisdom teeth possibly out.
Oh my goodness!
Right? So yeah, if you're watching us on camera and you notice that my right side or your left, depending on what you're watching us on, is a little more swollen than the left, it's because I think I've avoided taking out my wisdom teeth long enough, and it's finally caught up with me. So
I thought you got in a bar fight again or something.
No, and I don't sound like I got a bunch of marbles in my mouth either. So that was a different show. Didn't we do that? We did that last time.
We did that last time.
With Hitman Huseman.
Yeah. So
anyway, I was listening to that intro that we've been doing for the last 4 years and realized that, you know, we always have a variety of people that show up on the show. But the interesting thing about it has always been that everybody's got an own story. And sometimes when we sit there and we talk to people long enough, we find out what the story is. I think maybe we just get them comfortable enough, they just tell us, right? But, which is always a good thing. Because sometimes, especially these days when we want everything in 5-second snapshots and sound bites, we sometimes don't get the depth of either the people or the issues or whatever, and we try to go delve a little deeper on this show with stuff. And with that being said, I'd like to welcome this week's guest, Diane Dixon. Diane, thanks for being here.
I'm delighted to be here, Rod.
And we had a nice little catch-up chat sort of at lunch, and it's amazing what people will tell you when you listen, right? But that's a rare form, I think, these days too, don't you think? Like, people don't listen. They talk at each other. Yeah. So what I wanted to do, and I want to do a little intro, and you know, if anybody knows, Diane is a sitting council member in Newport Beach. She was mayor pro temp and then mayor, I think 2016, was it, Diane?
That's correct.
And then you're also running for re-election.
That's correct.
And so that's the, you know, 8x10 glossy poster, you know, thing, you know, all this stuff. And we'll get to that, okay, because it is election season and we are in Orange County and we're not going to avoid that. But you were telling me about your story and you're telling me about sort of the professional career path. And the thing that was interesting for me is when I asked you, why did you run? Because you ran in 2014 was the first time?
That's correct.
Yeah. And I said, well, why did you run? And then, you had just finished telling me about this whole very rich professional career and a lot of, you know, international background and, you know, working for, and I want you to tell people about that here in a minute. But it's like, why did you run? And it fit directly into what we do with the show, which is basically that it's a journey of aging. It's a journey of life. Along the path of that journey, there are moments when you basically find opportunities to either reinvent yourself or to pursue other things because you've already kind of reached a milestone or a goal accomplished mm-hmm. in one capacity, and there's a part of your soul that now needs to be fed in a different capacity. And so without further ado, I'm going to ask you the same question, okay? Prior to going down the career path, what did you do?
The political career path?
Yes.
I was, and first of all, thank you for inviting me to OC Talk Radio.
Absolute pleasure.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it, to tell my story. I think everybody has a story to tell, and so I applaud you for inviting me in and others like myself who look back and say, "This is."
We don't value storytelling as much as we used to.
Well, I do.
And we should.
I was, and that's part of my corporate story. I was in marketing, communications, storytelling, frankly, for my entire career mm-hmm. in business. I did graduate from USC mm-hmm. With a degree in political science. I've always enjoyed politics.
Because, and you were telling me you had a background, family background.
My parents, yeah. Both of them were journalists, and my parents owned what started out as a small newspaper chain and became a large newspaper, community newspaper chain. So I grew up with a printing press. And,
I bet you those were fascinating conversations around the dinner table.
Well, the dinner table conversation was really when my father was a publisher as well as the editor and wrote the editorials.
Yeah.
So it was about issues. And when I was growing up, the dinner table conversation, it was clearly half the people agreed with my father and the other half didn't, or half the people liked my father or half the people didn't, on whatever the issue was.
Right.
So I was raised in a dynamic where you talk about things, you learn about issues, you study the issues, you understand the issues, but at the end of the discussion is you do the right thing.
Right.
What is the right thing to do for the community in this case, or for whatever the circumstances, do the right thing. That
right.
infuses my thought process of what is the best solution for this problem, mm-hmm. and what will serve the community better. So back to your question. I worked in business. I, out of college, worked in business-oriented organizations and worked from business, and then I joined a great company, still is a great company, called Avery Dennison now.
Sure.
In 1982, and headed up communications. And as the company was expanding over the 30 years, it had been, and it was founded in 1935. That's a wonderful story, too, the invention of the self-adhesive label.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe another story, another program.
Well, and that's a company that's reinvented itself multiple times, too.
And I'm going to come back to reinventing, because I don't know if it's reinventing. It's this repositioning. I did not make up anything new. I am who I always was. I am repositioning my skill sets in a different channel of life interest. So let me say so.
Rediscovering?
Well, I call it rebranding, and that's a common term, but I started using it a long time ago. But
yeah.
Rebranding, reinvigorating, re-energizing, repositioning my skill set. And
sure.
This is after 30 or 40 years working in a corporate environment, amassing skills that I didn't have necessarily
going in, sure.
But looking back over 30 years, I go, I could do this, I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized in talking with other women friends, whether they were lawyers, my doctors, mm-hmm. teachers in education, as we all, you talk about aging, going through the aging process, that Passages of Life, that was a book a long time ago, is really true. So you look back, you become 60 or 55, 60. Your children, if you've had children, have gone through life. You've mm-hmm. juggled the demands of being a working mother.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stories about that. And not all the stories are always positive for everybody. You have heartache and sickness and divorce and death. That is life. You come through that journey when you're 55, 60, and you look back, I say, you look back over the landscape of your life, and you realize you have a whole different set of skills you never knew you had when you were 30, because you've aggregated the wisdom of life. And so when I stepped away from my corporate life, I knew I wasn't done yet. And when I started talking with other women, I talked with women who were 75. They
right.
were not done yet. They were still very productive.
I'm going to ask you something, because something just came to mind. When you were in the depth of your professional career, right, and you had mm-hmm. been doing it for a number of years, a lot, you know,
mm-hmm.
and obviously gone through growth and promotion and, you know, taking on more responsibilities and expanding what you were involved in and all this stuff, did you actually, while you were doing that, have that conscious awareness
No.
of what you're talking about?
No.
So until you actually took the time, or maybe were forced to have the time, to reflect, okay? Isn't that interesting, though?
And I did not know. That was my own self-discovery.
Yeah.
Is you think, what am I going to do now? And for a lot of women who have had active careers, just going cold turkey, some women say, give me a golf course, I'm out of here. I have an energy level that I and my daughter, we raised our child, a very successful young woman who
yeah.
went to law school and is married and has three children in New York City and doesn't live here. That may have been different for me, but you don't know, I call it the landscape of your life until
yeah.
you take stock of it and you realize the aggregation of life experiences gives you a skill set you never knew you had.
The thing that blows my mind is that we should encourage people to take that time to take reflection. Because imagine if you actually did that along the way as well.
Well, this is what I tell people. When people are in their 30s or 40s and they ask, well, that's another part of this story, is I love helping young women, women of any age, help them move along on this passage of time. Really reflecting what you're saying. If I stop to analyze it too much, it could become paralysis by analysis.
Right.
But what I do talk to people about, men and women, is have a goal. Mm. And this was my own personal model framework for my goal. When people say, well, should I do this? Should I go this course of life? Should I do this? I said, what you need to decide on yourself, and I said this to myself, in 5 years, when you look back, will you wish that you had done something else? So, for example, to fast forward through my life, when you asked me why I ran for city council, we can get into that. It was an open seat, a termed out seat. I knew that if I didn't exercise that option at that moment in time in that year, it would have been potentially 4 or 8 years. And so I did not want to look back and think, why didn't I do
it? Well, and you used an interesting term when I asked that. You said, you had said to your husband, if not now, when? Right. So when I hear that, what I hear is there was an interest to do that, because you also then followed it up that you always had an interest to basically be in public service.
That's correct.
So there was an unfulfilled component that was there, because if it was only a matter of, well, yeah, I got nothing better to do with my time and this thing that just came up, there was more to that. There was a deeper draw for why you chose to step in. Because you had this thing that was not fulfilled.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And that's what I had pushed aside for maybe 30 years when I was traveling all over the world and in my corporate role. There'd be little political issues. I was in Pasadena for most of that time, all that time. And I think, oh, I've got to get involved in doing this on a neighborhood issue. Mm-hmm. I just didn't have the time. Mm-hmm. And then raising a child.
Which a lot of people don't, right.
Yeah, we have one child, and I'm happy to say my husband and I have been married 43 years.
Congratulations.
Next month. And have a successful daughter and three wonderful young grandsons who are the light of my life. And that's wonderful. That's another chapter that I didn't anticipate. And life is just always opening up new doors.
Happy accidents.
So, yes, it's a very perceptive question, because I knew it was in me, but I had no avenue previously. And so one door closes, another door opens. And I said, if not now, when now? This is the time. And I have the energy, the interest. And I know as you become reflective on your own skill sets, I love people. I've had a career in marketing and communications.
Go ahead and share that. What was it, four P's?
My four P's. I love the people part. I love meeting new people, listening to their stories, finding connections in life and relationships. There are always coincidences that I marvel at. I love problem solving. Mm-hmm. Working in a corporation was all about solving problems, making something work better. Actually, I've used this quote. I worked in my career at Avery for 30 years for the CEO. There were three CEOs. I worked for each of them. Directly, they were my boss. And working for CEO is a unique experience. And I have three graduate degrees in working through with CEOs. I mean, it's just a phenomenal experience at the highest level. But one of the CEOs was great with lessons of life that I learned from. And it was, if it ain't broke, look again. There's always a way
to make it better.
To make it better and cost less and work better. So that informed my thought process, is that always is to make something better, and how can I help make my community better? As a member of any community, we are all investors. I think in terms of shareholders and publicly traded companies, and returning value to shareholders, returning value to customers.
We're all invested in the success, right?
We're all and we are investors. If we own or rent property, we are invested in the quality of life that our communities offer, in making our communities safe, making sure that they are invested in to restore and continue to grow property values, because in our case, in all cities' case, property taxes are the primary revenue source for cities. So we want our communities to, we want to invest. And as a property owner, we want our neighborhoods to look good and increase that property value, because that benefits the community. And
I could almost say those are universal desires that everybody holds, regardless where.
But I wanted to do something. Here's what another backstory, and I call it the portfolio life, some more P's. I didn't finish the piece. Okay. People.
People.
Problems. Policy. I like the policy making. Yeah. And the politics. You have to like politics and the give and take. I actually kind of like all that. It's kind of fun.
You just missed the discussions around your dinner table growing up.
Well, it is. It's all. I mean, my daughter, which has so many digressions, I never allowed her to watch cartoons, sadly, but it was always 60 Minutes in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she kind of came up mm-hmm. as a kind of a better carbon copy of her parents. My husband is a former prosecutor for Los Angeles County and headed up major crimes for his career in Los Angeles, the major homicide crimes and big trials. And I was in corporate America, and then right. now I'm in public
service. The reason why it was interesting to me is, under normal conditions, you ask that question to people. You know, why did you get into public service? Or we ask this question to people that are maybe like in, I don't know, long-term care or senior advocacy or whatever it is. There's always a personal story
mm-hmm.
because nobody goes into this for money.
Right.
Okay.
It's the best volunteer job.
Exactly. Right. Whether you are paid or not paid for it, whether you're doing it as a part of what, you know, you got a 9-to-5 and you're basically, there's always a personal thing. Okay. It could be greed based, it could be whatever, but there's a personal drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The interesting thing when I asked you that question is, in most cases, there's an actual catalyst, there's an issue. You know, mm-hmm. there are people squatting in my front yard. There's things off the coastline that I don't care about. You know, somebody's trying to dredge something, whatever. There's usually an issue that activates people.
Mm-hmm.
What I found fascinating about your answer, Diane, is that you actually had, yes, we understand there was a desire that was unfulfilled. There was something that you kind of always wanted to do. But it wasn't really driven by a catastrophe, a challenge of mm-hmm. some sort that was timely, right there and then. It was about the journey. It was that next chapter.
And I think very perceptive of you. I enjoy this discussion. But it was, I thought I could bring something. My skill,
of course.
Again, back to the life, the aggregation of skill sets. I've been in business. I understand how to engage with people, how to make create value
sure.
for whatever it
sure.
is. So how can I translate the business? I come from a business
yeah, perspective. Yeah, you had the reflective awareness of this that you brought with you and how you could apply it to
yes.
something else.
And I felt the confidence is key,
mm-hmm.
that I could bring that skill set to help make our community better.
Even though you didn't know exactly how it was going to apply,
yeah.
you still had the confidence.
That I was going to bring that skill set mm-hmm. to apply in this community. As a property owner, I would want to protect our interests. As an
right.
investor in the community, I would want to protect that interest.
But they weren't being threatened, is my
no.
point. It was not like something that was a challenge that was happening. Barbarians at the door kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
That you actually engage from a different perspective, which I think speaks volumes, because you're not in a crisis mode. Going in, you're actually going in giving and offering mode, in providing and bringing with you mode, and it's a different mindset.
Well, it is. Now, there are, not to say that there weren't issues that I quickly grabbed onto.
Of course,
well, that relate
City
to my
council, right?
Well, that relate. Well, when I was running and forming my campaign platform,
mm-hmm.
is I come from a corporate background
mm-hmm.
of serving the needs of investors and shareholders
mm-hmm.
and customers, creating value. Looking at the city of Newport Beach, and we don't need to resurrect
right.
all those, but there were some financial control issues.
You said transparency and things
and
like that.
And then I
that
felt that bringing my business understanding mm-hmm. of business finance and transparency and full disclosure,
right.
I could bring.
That's the world you lived in.
And
yeah.
fiscal discipline.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, if it ain't broke, look again. How can it be made better for less money?
Sure.
So that's my. The template so how do I apply that
right.
to running city governments when I knew that city governments everywhere are always hard pressed for finances? How can I bring that skill set?
What I find fascinating about that, and I know a little bit about the background of how that campaign went and kind of like with who was also possibly running, whatever. What's interesting to me, because if I understood correctly, you ended up, even though there were people that pulled papers, you ended up basically running uncontested for your district, right?
That's correct. They
okay.
decided not to run.
So what's interesting to me about that is we seem to today, and I don't want to harp on the political sort of side of this conversation, but we seem today that unless there is some sort of, like people run to save or solve, but it's a like dire condition.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that you actually went in from a different perspective. Like, if I was basically looking to who to vote for, and I was in your district,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. What's drawing my attention Like, you're not basically, you know, tying yourself to a tree or saving something, you know, that's like so emotionally heightened that I'm basically paying attention to it 100%. You're actually saying, I'm here to be of service.
Well, I'm here
to make things better.
What's the problem?
Right.
How can I help you?
Well, we can always make it better.
And how can I help? I mean, there are always issues.
Yeah.
At the resident level or the business owner level. So my platform was fiscal responsibility, fiscal discipline, fiscal rigor. I mean, that's what my whole mindset.
Yeah.
Transparency.
Yeah.
What you see is what you get. And listening to our residents and business owners. You'd be amazed. And you're in the listening and talking and storytelling and conversation
business.
Most of
the time, right.
It's a very simple lesson in life. People really want to be listened to. Yeah. They want to be respected. They want to think that you care about their problems. They vote for you or consider will vote for you. Will you listen to their problems? This is my full-time job. Mm-hmm. I'm not listening to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The issues that are important to me that I will embrace mm-hmm. for my constituents bubble up from them.
Oh, on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And so what could be a real big problem for one resident and said, Diane, you've got to do something about this. I said, okay, let's talk about it, of course.
Right, sense of urgency may not
well,
really...
but talk to your neighbors. Is this something that is really...
resolvable.
And systemic. I mean, is this something that is broad-based that we need... I need... This is the politics of it that I enjoy. There are 7 members of the Newport Beach City Council. I may have a great idea, the best solution. I've got to convince 3 other people to go along with this idea.
The democratic process.
Yes. So I will say to the residents or business owners, if it requires a change in the municipal code or a new regulation, you've got to help me.
Mm-hmm.
I will help you if we've established there's some credibility here to do something that it's fixable. But you have to help me generate the support.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another reason why I love local government, because the voter does have a voice, and they activate that voice. They could be activists, and as you said earlier, they could be...
I will take an overactive and engaged community over one that is not any
day. And you could get me going on newspapers and the role of news in our society, because it's just very sad what's happening. The people know really fully... I'm not saying this about Newport Beach, just
in general, right?
In general, that the news is not being covered at the local level.
Well, and people don't have the time to delve into stuff as deeply because they're drawn, you know, their priorities and their realities from everything from, you know, jobs to kids to whatever. I mean,
life is busy.
But yet you and I both know that if you're really going to have a conscious awareness of what's going on, you have to be open to multiple sources. You have to digest a lot of information.
Yes.
And you have to kind of come up to your own conclusions, which all takes time.
Well, there is a process, and I could hear one side, then there's another side of the story. So the wonderful thing about local government is that we could expose this to a public discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have what city councils have, and we have a lot, are called study sessions. So before we start legislating, we say, here is an issue.
Right.
And here's a problem. How do we solve it? There are different solutions. Come and talk about it in public session. Everybody has 3 minutes to make their public comments. And then that informs the council, and we inform staff. City staff come back to us with how to fix this problem.
Uh-huh.
The people are engaged. Let me tell you, we have a council meeting every Tuesday, second and fourth Tuesday. So on the council agenda next week, always forthcoming, there's always going to be an issue people are caring about. So we get email letters. It's very easy to send an email to your city council.
Mm-hmm.
So in Newport Beach case, people listening, you go newportbeachca.gov, and you could go to the homepage of city council, and you could click on something that sends the same letter
to everybody. Mm-hmm.
And so on any given agenda item, we may get upwards of 20, 30, 40. There's one matter on the Tuesday agenda that I've probably gotten 300 letters. Mm-hmm. People do write letters. And I will say that they are read and they are considered. And when people even go one step further and come and speak in public comment, it is profoundly powerful.
Absolutely. Anybody who's been sitting in any of those sessions at a city council meeting and seen the impact of actual, you know, verbal commentary from the dais and from the podium and the exchange that takes place, absolutely.
It is so valuable.
Yeah.
And people on the council level, they care about listening.
Nobody is in public service without some degree of caring.
And wanting to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And so as a council person, not coming with a preconceived notion, hey, I may think I know the solution that we're going to move forward, then I'll start hearing, and then you read the letters and you hear the input. You know, maybe we should tweak it a little bit.
I think that says a lot to in your credit, because a lot of times, unfortunately these days, people have a predisposed ideology or bias to a situation. And I think you coming from, correct me if I'm wrong, coming from a corporate environment where you have had to evaluate things and do kind of the right thing based on the circumstances of that particular situation, you are coming at it with more of an open, non-predisposed until you get all the facts as much as possible.
Well, that's right. In business, and I'm sure this is
true. Still have to make a decision. But you're never going to be able to just sit back and collect information forever.
Correct. But in business, you have to make your case, because it usually involves funding of a budget of some sort. So you have to make a case, and you can't be just a solo individual just doing it because you want to do it.
This is what I want.
And, that was an important life lesson I learned when I was in my early 30s, because I think, well, I could do this. My ideas are the best. I've thought about this. This is what I should do. Yeah. And I was a 30-year-old. I look back, oh, my gosh. The CEO that I work for really kind of humbled me many times. Said, Diane, yeah, you think you've got a great idea, but let's bring more people into this discussion. And he realized the financing issues, the community issues, the environmental issues, the realities of business. Okay, you have to build a coalition within a company. You have to articulate your point. You make a case. You have to debate it. All those are all skills that you hone and strengthen over time to make your case to convince people that your idea, which is a collection of ideas. I had one phrase I would say to my staff who work for me, that we have to solve a problem. We're going to sit down at this table and solve this problem. Here is my idea. If we end this meeting in 60 minutes with my idea, we've not done our job. Mm-hmm. Mine's just a starting point. Mm-hmm. We build on it. Because what you learn in business, and it does transfer to community, is there are so many ways to solve a problem, and may the best idea win.
Well, and you have to get your ego out of the way when you get into that spot, because your alternatives are as follows. My idea is the only thing that's worth anything, and I'm not going to listen to anybody else, which to me stems from, really, you might be putting on the most confident face on the planet. That stems from complete lack of confidence and feeling threatened at the slightest opportunity of somebody else posing a different perspective on something, which speaks volumes when somebody is in that attitude. Because when I see something like that, I'm like, yeah, you know what? You really are limited. But the alternative, when you talk about real confidence, if you are open and to receive and be exposed to other people's perspective on things, that's when you really know, because at the end of the day, you still make up your own mind. You still are digesting.
It's a better.
The proposed
solution is better. It's richer because it incorporates many different points of view.
As long as I get my ego out of the way.
Yeah.
And I mean, we do this with what I do. I did it yesterday with an intern at my company. We're working on a design for a taco restaurant in Long Beach, and we were working on stuff, and you have to. This is something that's kind of interesting. It's been kind of my part of my journey. Is you got to allow people the autonomy and the latitude to express what it is that they have to offer you. Mm-hmm. And if you do, you may be very pleasantly surprised in those circumstances. But if you limit it, you control it, you don't allow for that kind of input, be it from the podium, be it through letters, I don't like what I'm hearing, so I'm going to just shut off to that, right? You may very well miss a very valuable nugget that makes your situation even better.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, that's been...
Unfortunately, that is sort of the reality we've been kind of living in
lately. Well, it depends on what your motivations are. I mean, I have a certain... I think being,
solution.
And being operating within a set of principles, which are fiscal responsibility, transparency, and listening to people, and doing the right thing.
Right.
And always not making it up as I go along. Mm-hmm. So it's always going back to that little voice in my head, is this the right thing to do? Mm-hmm. Is this the best solution that will have long-term consequences because it becomes policy? Mm-hmm. Is this the best? And so you want the ideas, you want the input, because you come up with a better product. It always does get better. I mean, it's unusual if it doesn't, that layering process doesn't improve the final product. But listening to people, because they all come, everybody comes, I've been in the communication business my entire career, and it astounds me that people hear things differently, they process information differently.
Yep.
You have to allow that conversation.
And diversity
of ideas to take place.
So with that being said, We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to do the right thing and take a break.
All right.
Okay, so let's take a break, Paul.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy three with triple points on airfare. Buy two with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
We are back. Are we back?
We're back.
Okay. So we're back with Diane Dixon, who, among other things, is continuing to add to her portfolio, life portfolio, portfolio life.
Yes.
Life.
Yes.
Can I mention one thing that just caught my ear as I'm listening to this here today? Do the right thing. I don't hear those words enough anymore. My father was of the World War II generation. Worked for a major corporation, Chrysler Corporation, as a vice president. And I'm not saying, you know, they would try and figure a way to do it cheaper, faster, better, whatever. But never, ever would he cook the books.
Yeah, but
or anybody.
But
I mean, it just. But they did the right thing.
Yeah, Paul. But here's the thing, right? There's a duality with that statement. Okay, when you throw around the words "do the right thing," okay, if it's coming from a position of predisposed bias, that's doing the right thing according to what I think the right thing.
That's
is,
true,
right? Which is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about, we touched on it a little bit when we were off the air, is doing the right thing for who should be also part of that equation. Is it doing the right thing for me? Because if it's doing the right thing for me, it may have a completely different That's reality fine. And reflection of what happens versus if I'm doing the right thing for everybody in my neighborhood. If I'm doing the right thing for people that agree with my idea or people who also don't agree with my idea. Where is the doing the right thing? So we need to be very clear that when we say doing the right thing, that doing the right thing isn't about walking in and stating what should happen. We're actually doing the right thing based on consensus, based on compromise, based on other factors that I've diverse from my own opinion. And if we're doing that, great. Then yes, we are doing the right thing for the majority, the common good, if you will. Right? And that may not be exactly how I would perceive doing it if it was only me involved.
However, if it's a matter of principle and it's not the right thing, it's easy. I would vote no.
Well, that's an easy one to vote
yeah.
no on.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Those are not the difficult ones. Yeah. The difficult ones are that gray area.
I guess
where,
I was getting
where
up
there's
with...
a lot of possible ways to approach something, and then it becomes, well, no, I'm fighting for this one over that one.
Well, principle, doing the right thing is about the matter of principle. If there are multiple situations, some are better than others. Maybe it's not right or wrong. It's just what is a better solution? What costs more? What costs less?
Right.
What?
Based on certain parameters
yes.
that are defined. And that's what I mean. Sometimes, look, we live in a society, I may be wrong, but I think we live in a society that has become very finite in terms of how much time we spend on something. Okay? I want a snap bite or a quote. I want the quote to be short. I don't even want to do a paragraph quote. I want like a one sentence quote, right?
Bullet points.
Right. Don't give me a brand name that's two words. I want one. You know, it's like, you know, Prince. Prince doesn't become Prince anymore. Now it's just a symbol. I mean, I want everything condensed. I want everything small. I only have so much time to devote to something. And that's very unfortunate because we are actually, it's costing us something as a society when we approach things like that.
Well, I, you know, that's another avenue to go down from a conversation standpoint. I think there is so much bullet point conversation, one word, ads become, you know, it's, they're just imagine, and that's a kind of an overused word. I
remember the slogan, but I don't have no clue what the product was.
And this is the point. I think companies who start to tell a difference, a more
authentic
story will be remembered longer and better.
You know, Diane, you'll appreciate this because I think, especially with your background in communication, I've been saying this for the last couple of weeks. I've been saying, look, we live in an over-curated world of 8x10 glossies, okay, where everything has almost become generically repetitive, okay? And if you have the courage to actually voice your own authentic voice, whether I agree with it or not, it's going to resonate a lot more because we are hungry for that kind of conversation. When I started doing this radio show, I had no clue what I was doing. And as a result, and I've said this to many people, I feel like I'm getting away with something every week because I actually get to sit down and have a conversation that doesn't have an agenda, doesn't have a to-do list, doesn't have bullets, right? It's organic. The benefit of this conversation is the having of this conversation and being open to where it takes you. We had a lunch conversation that isn't even anywhere near what we're having right now because this is just taking on its own dynamic.
I will recommend to you and to your listeners in yesterday's New York Times in the life section, I guess, or maybe it was the art section, it was a very long an interview with Dick Cavett. Now, do you know who Dick Cavett was? Okay. And it's all about how he talk to people, the conversations he had on his show. And he told the story that I will repeat here that, and this is a name that many people will not know, Jack Parr. Do you remember that name?
Absolutely.
He was the very first of the talk shows. He preceded Johnny Carson, who most people probably remember. Jack Parr's advice to Dick Cavett as he was beginning his show is, do not interview people. Cavett say, what do I do? Just sit there in silence? And Jack Parr said, no, have a conversation with people.
You know what they call that in the South? They call it visiting.
Having a conversation. So
we're visiting.
This is a wonderful review of all such famous people that he spent 90 minutes having conversations with that probed into areas organically, as you say, that's such a good word, and it naturally flowed. Those kinds of conversations.
That journey.
And I'm not being critical of the current nighttime lineup, but those, and Dick Cavett, so I'm quoting Dick Cavett and saying this, it's not about somebody who happens to be in L.A. or New York and has 30 minutes from between appointments and needs to sell their next movie. He says, I don't want that person. I really want to talk to the person about...
But you know why I think a lot of that programming has gone down the way it has? We have actually been sold and bought into the fact that the only way that we're going to get audience, the only way we are going to basically get people's attention, therefore advertisers are willing to basically cover airtime, is if we have a very strong predisposed alignment one way or the other on something. And so that's the safe way. The courageous way is I'm going to go out there and put out an authentic voice and somebody it's going to resonate with. And it may be a niche market, maybe, you know, but I honestly believe that there people are so hungry for authentic content, exchange, whatever, realness, okay? In a world that is all prepackaged and kind of homogeneous, right, that people that you want to be engaged will engage if you provide them that alternative. And every day we move away further and further from that everything.
You know, I'm a consumer of advertising and communication and words, but what I see are they're just words today. They don't create that authenticity
oftentimes. No depth of meaning.
Or depth of meaning. And coming from the business world where you – don't survive unless you create value in your product and improve that product and make it better each time and sell that product in a value-added way. I mean, anybody can make a commodity.
Sure.
Who wants to make – there's no profit in a very little margin in a commodity product. But what you sell has to be unique, and that creates value and that creates profit.
You know what you just reminded me? I'm kind of chuckling under my breath. When I did my master's degree – everything that we did project-wise, because it was more about the report or how you basically put the project together, whatever, we always worked on widgets. What the heck are widgets, right?
Yeah.
There was never anything that was like, let's take the time to actually talk about the soul of whatever the service or product that we were doing is. It was always, we're putting widgets together.
But so, I will say that I agree with your point you're making, but a lot of people don't even make widgets today.
No, they don't.
They're packaging air.
Yeah.
And getting back to the fundamentals of what we do as
well, widgets required manufacturing, right?
I do come out of the manufacturing world, and that is where everything has to create value, but you have to make the money to reinvest, and so you have to make a better product and a better widget. And making something for and making money off of it so you could invest and grow and hire people.
And have it sustainable.
It's really economics 101.
Right.
But going back to your original point of creating value and doing the right thing, when it's a matter of principle, there's no debate.
Right.
So you don't compromise your principle, but you can compromise on solutions to get to that principle.
Right.
And so I do believe, and I think on our city council many, many times, the votes reflect a give and take of a process to get to the right position of what makes sense. People come with their own point of view and their own set of principles or ideology on how something should work.
Right.
But we really come to a meeting of the minds of really what makes sense. But it's informed by the people who have written and spoken and talked about it. That helps so much.
Well, and I think you know, given the fact that you are a districted city council, it's even more impressive because people technically are coming in to represent their part of the city.
Oh, but let me explain something different for Newport Beach.
Are you guys at large?
We are a hybrid system, and I love this system, and I didn't know much about it until I ran in it.
Okay.
We do represent districts, as you just said. So my district is the Balboa Peninsula and the ocean side of West Newport, District 1, because it's the oldest part of Newport Beach. We represent that district. Our nomination papers, in lieu of a primary, is you get an X number of signatures from people who are registered voters in your district.
Yeah.
You are elected at large.
Interesting.
So everyone votes, every Newport Beach voter votes for, in this year's will be four people up for re-election,
four
of the seven. So they will vote District 1, District down the line.
I love that.
I'll tell you why. I love it as a representative because, yes, I need to be attentive and attuned and an advocate for the residents and business owners in my district. But
you still got to sell yourself to the whole city.
Yes, because the seawall problem, for example, is a problem, particularly in Balboa Island. It's not my district, but we do have seawall issues and flooding issues on the peninsula. Well, someone who represents Newport Coast, those residents really, why do we care about seawalls?
Right.
You have to make that case to the entire city because it's going to be their...
Well, you can't get on this in the seat only focus on your district.
Well, that's right.
That's awesome.
That's exactly right. So, and you have to, it's the whole negotiation with your fellow council members. Mm-hmm. For example, new fire station, we're the oldest part of the city, so everything we have is being, after 60 years, being regenerated. A new fire station, Lido Fire Station, is fire station number 2 in the city. It was supposed to be temporary 65 years ago. So we have are proposing, we're still in this process, but we have agreed as a council to relocate that fire station to another nearby adjacent property that became available when a McDonald's closed.
Mm-hmm.
So we're relocating. Well, I had to convince, and my residents were critical, my constituents were critical, to help advocate for why we needed a new fire station and to spend the money to build a new fire station. And I needed to make that case to three other members, and it turned out, I think, it was 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
But I just need four votes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the give and take, so everyone has an interest.
No, I really like that. I hadn't heard about that, and I really like that hybrid. In fact, I will tell you this. Actually, it's not directed to you. Anybody in San Clemente that is talking about districting, you know how I feel about the fact that given the grounds that you have been laid out, I don't believe that it should happen in San Clemente. But I would be open for a hybrid system. So if you guys want to do districts in San Clemente, then that's fine. But that's for primary.
Mm-hmm.
And then for actually getting elected, it would be at large. So city council members that I know that I know some of them listen, and the city manager, there you go. So I'll sign up on that one if you guys want.
So that would be, you're a charter city, aren't you? Yes, you have to be a charter amendment to do that. It was part, you know, the forefathers.
They were trying to get it on the ballot. I don't know if it's going to make it this year on it. But there was a discussion. And, you know, this is a kind of common conversation going on in a lot of cities in Orange County about districting, non-districting. I mean, Fullerton just did it. Anaheim did it before. There's grounds that are basically on ethnic representation. In some places where you don't have that diversity, it's other things that are coming up. So it's just interesting because sometimes it could be a political tool that people are trying to use for things, unfortunately. Be that as it may, I do want to talk about, and we start touching on it. You said it wasn't reinventing. Okay.
Well, the portfolio life.
On the portfolio. So let's talk about the portfolio life.
Okay. So after I stepped away from my career in business and what do? I started to talk to other women who were the same age as myself and looking for books to read. And I decided I needed to write. I'm a writer.
You didn't find a book to read.
I didn't find a book. I'm going to write a book. I always wanted to write a book. This was before city council, running for city council, entered my thought process. And I interviewed ultimately about 50 women. One woman referred another woman, And these were business, educators, lawyers, doctors, investment advisors, It was a wonderful opportunity to see where people are in the age 50 to 75 bracket, frankly, and how they were looking at this time in their life. And the predominant common statement was, I'm not done yet. And so the portfolio life term evolved out of, you've had four, this is my thesis. Never before, this is a grandiose thesis, never before in the history of the world, in the history of the United States, in the history of the working people in the United States, has there been a cohort of women who have had a career of whatever profession for 30 or 40 years. Cohort has never existed. As we've gone, you talk about the...
As much as people take it for granted, absolutely,
it's
you're
never,
right.
It's the size.
Uh-huh.
I was once quoted in Fortune magazine, like in the middle of 1980s, about the glass ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a statement that it hasn't played out, but I said, never before has there been a tsunami of educated women in the workforce, in business, in all forms of professions, moving through our labor system. What are these women going to create, and how they're going to break through the glass ceiling? They're just, they're legions of them. So some of it, in fact, New York Times had a story about this yesterday, that where are all these women, as some of the women CEOs are now retiring or stepping aside.
Maybe they gave up on breaking through the glass ceiling and breaking barriers elsewhere.
So what I found with the women and of this age, that they've had this phenomenal cohort of women, what are they doing with their lives? I wanted to understand them. And the common thread that ran through all of them is that they had a career for 30 or 40 years. They may have stepped away from the 80-hour weeks. They've raised children or not. They've had marriages successful or not. They've had a heartache or not. But they have merged through, I call it the journey of their life, and they look back and they say, the wisdom, the accumulation of knowledge, life experience, that you're able to talk about storytelling, you have wisdom and advice, whether it's for your children, whether your coworkers, life experience has been undervalued until this generation of men and women, to be able to collectively pull that together and say, what do I do with that? Portfolio life, real quickly, it's using your business, your professional skills, you have your family, you have your philanthropy, and you have your community. I used to say, I sit on the board.
Those are all ingredients of your life.
Yes. I sit on the board of United Way. I did this in Los Angeles and now in Orange County. I'm a fervent believer. And one of this is my own speech. This isn't their speech. Is you give something to your life and your career. You support your church. You support your schools. You support your alumni. You're of some organization. You support your philanthropies. Help the community, save a little for the community. And that's what organizations such as United Way or community organizations do. Give something back to the community, either time, talent, or treasure. Give something back. You only know to do that. And I've been doing that. We all do that in our own way to give to the community. But when you get to this point in life, really make it substantial.
Well, and the reward you get from that, and we've said this before when we've encouraged people to do volunteer opportunities and seek them out, the reward that you get from that is unlike any other reward that you get. It fulfills a part of your soul. It enriches you in ways that no dollar amount on a paycheck is going to do.
And the need is there.
And the need is beyond there. Right? There's more need than you can.
In our own county.
Right.
And you don't have to look far for it. And I would say this in Los Angeles. I say it in Orange County. You drive down the freeway and you really don't get off and go into those parts of the city that you just don't go off to. Right. But that's where the need is.
You know, I'll also say this, Diane. I think it's important to remind everybody that, and I've done this, I've looked at like newspaper articles from the 1920s in San Clemente, because I used to be on the historic, I am on the Historical Society Board. I was president. I've been on there for about 15 years volunteering in that capacity. But I've looked at old newspapers, okay, because I'm also a little bit of a history buff, and I'm always searching for little nuggets.
I love those
old
papers, right? Too, yes.
So what I realize is it's the same issues. The names of the people are different.
Mm-hmm.
The implementation of what these issues are is different. But this is not something new. So when we tell people to go out and volunteer and they're looking around, they're saying, the sky is falling, it's overwhelming, I can't be involved in stuff. Remember that this isn't something new. This isn't going to stop. You can be part of something that makes it better, does the right thing given what's going on right now. But this isn't something that should be overwhelming. You should be looking at it as a volunteer opportunity, because we're all in it together.
You know what I would say in America, because I've traveled all over the world, it's a, and de Tocqueville actually wrote about this in the early 1800s when he traveled around America, is Americans have a spirit for giving and for helping and volunteerism that really doesn't, I remember when I was in my corporate life, it was the Statue of Liberty was, there was an organization to restore the Statue of Liberty in Ellis Island, and because immigration is really important to Europeans, because a lot of them came to America, we were trying to, and employees were involved in raising money for this, and Europeans didn't really understand, why are you, the government should do that. And it was really an interesting personal growth experience to have to make the point to European smart professionals said, well, you know, the government doesn't know. In America, we all contribute to make our communities strong.
It's one of those pillars that make it such a great place.
It is. And it's the volunteer spirit that Americans are unique with. And actually, it became really a popular thing to do in the Netherlands and in England, where we created this wellspring of support for the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island.
Well, I was involved with a gentleman who was basically commemorating the 100-year anniversary of the Armenian Genocide a couple of years ago, and they were doing a ride from L.A. to D.C. And in the course of organizing for this ride, they were looking at some archival material, and I did not realize that when the time, I mean, it's 100 years ago, that the outpouring of support that happened across, because they literally had like a train campaign or whatever where they rode through the states, and people would come out and give them literally the shirts off their backs. There were actually photographs where people that were either city council were literally like wearing a barrel because they basically, that community gave everything for that particular thing. And so we forget that sometimes in the heated mess that we deal with sometimes here where, you know, we lose compromise or something, that this is part of the soul of this country that really makes it different.
And in Newport Beach or in Santa Ana or in Anaheim, it's the people who are volunteering and serving in public office, serving in some way to give back. That's just what we do as a community of people who may have very different positions, political differences and ideological differences, but they want to make their communities in their own way. You have to respect that these people,
everybody has that same common thread.
Yes, they want to make our system work better.
So before we go, two things. First of all, how do people get involved and help and find out more about you and your campaign?
Well, thank you for asking that. Diane Dixon, DixonForNewport.com, right to my website. I thought you were going to ask me on the broader level. It's a really important passion for me for people to get involved in their communities.
I formed
with another, I should say we, a group of women who have been involved in public and appointed positions in Newport Beach by the City Council, like the Library, Arts, Parks, Beaches, and Recreation Commissions. Yeah. We formed Women in Newport Networking, WIN. And we've done this now for 3 years. We have a forum every year to encourage men and women to apply to serve in our government and be appointed to serve on one of these commissions.
How did they find out about that?
Well, it's on it's on the city's website, and every April, May period, that's the application period. And I will say, when I started out on the council in 2015-16, I found out that out of 200 applications, 30 came from women. I wanted to really encourage women to become involved. Now we've gotten that it's really pretty much 60-40 men, but we've increased the women participation, and it's a wonderful thing. So happy to have anyone support for my reelection campaign, DixonForNewport.com.
Also go out and volunteer and be
involved. I can help put signs that we could all put signs out, and I'm going to be walking the city August. It's now August, September, October. I'm going to be walking. I love walking the city and leaving my door hangers to just help everyone get involved in this election to make our city a great city.
And my last question is, what do you do for Diane?
I'm doing it.
Well, but you do for everybody else.
I'm doing it.
You're doing it.
I couldn't be happier.
I had a feeling that was going to be your answer.
Couldn't be happier. I have the best job in the whole world, and that's serving the people of Newport Beach. Honestly, I've had a great career. I have a great family. I have a wonderful daughter, a wonderful husband who supports me. That's another story. You have to have someone who is really your partner in life.
Yeah.
And I had two great parents who gave me the confidence and the creativity and the determination to do what I do, and I'm living the life in the best city in California.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Diane,
for being here.
Well, Rod, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It was really a blast. So you will come anytime. Come on back.
Love it. I've always got stories to tell.
We love hearing them.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.